The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The Cancer Clinical Research Trust, the CCRT, will host an international symposium on translational research in oncology in the Herbert Park Hotel from tomorrow until Friday. Now, the symposium is to be chaired by Professor John Crown, who joins me now in studio. John, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Good morning to your listeners.
Now, you might explain translational research. What is that?
Well, in the old days, Pat, we had two kinds of cancer research. We had the stuff that was taking place in laboratories, which often was not very connected to actual patient care. And that wasn't because they weren't trying to connect it, but it was so fundamental. Progress had to be made before there could actually be discoveries which could translate into treatments. On the other side, we had pure clinical research, which was the research people like me were doing in hospitals with patients in clinics. New chemotherapy drugs would come and we would design studies to try and prove, were they better than the previous treatment? How much better were they? What was the safest way of giving them? But what's happened now is the science has gotten better and more sophisticated and developed, and more drugs are coming from the lab into the clinic, into the hospitals, that we now have what's called translational research. The discoveries are being, quote unquote, translated from the lab into real advances for patients. And it works both ways, because the lab people's work is being inspired by the questions we ask them about clinics. We'd say, such and such a drug works for so long in patients and then stops working. Would you please try and work out how the cancer...
So how quickly does that back and forth happen?
Faster and faster as time goes on. Some of the work now, I would say, from the time that there's the first twinkle in the eye, fundamental discovery about some little vulnerability in a cancer cell, to the time that there may actually be a drug for it, can be a very short time indeed. It can be a very short number of years. I think people should look at what happened with COVID. I mean, it was extraordinary that we had a vaccine for COVID basically within a year of the discovery of the virus. And with cancer, there isn't as much of the emergency legislation component, obviously, to cancer as there is. And there are built-in breaks and checkpoints to make sure that we do things safely and we work out all the angles. But it really is much faster than it used to be. It's very, very exciting.
Now, one of the things you mentioned there about a COVID vaccine, it just prompted a thought in me, which I've often considered. There is a vaccine for cats and leukemia. Why is there not a vaccine for humans and leukemia? Or could there be?
Well, there actually are a number of vaccines in development, and there's one vaccine which has been approved in the United States as part of a treatment for prostate cancer. And I should say also approved in areas in Europe as well. There were very exciting data this year for a new vaccine, and we're going to be hearing about it at the translational meeting in the next few days, RP1, which is a herpes virus which has been engineered to infect cancer cells and enhance their susceptibility to immune attack. And very interesting data were presented a few months ago at the American Society of Clinical Oncology, showing that for patients whose cancer had unfortunately come back after the best immunotherapy and had now become resistant to conventional immunotherapy, that in many cases you could make it shrink, go into remission, sometimes very long remissions, by using this viral vector. So there's a lot of interest in that area too.
So you're pushing in something that is infective, this RP1, but what it does is it renders the cancer cell vulnerable to treatment.
That is correct. And by the way, Pat, we do have vaccines to prevent human cancer. We have the HPV vaccine and we have hepatitis vaccines, both of which can reduce the incidence of cancer in cervix cancer and other HPV-related cancers, and also liver cancer. So we do have them. The cats don't have a complete lock
a monopoly on it.
Yeah.
Okay, so who's coming to your symposium?
It is unbelievable. We've run this meeting for years now, and the speakers come and they speak for free. We don't pay anybody speakers honorary. We accommodate them, we feed them and hotel them and look after their airfare. About one half of the speakers are coming from drug companies. They pay their own way. One half are from academic centres. I would say I don't want to diminish the quality of any of the speakers, but we have two utter superstars coming. Dr. Dennis Lehman, who has come to these shores on many occasions, who did the fundamental research in breast cancer, which led to the discovery of a drug called Herceptin, and ultimately second and third generation versions of that drug, which have revolutionized the treatment of some cases of breast cancer, but are now also having a huge impact in other types of cancer. And I'm delighted that Dennis, who is one of my absolute heroes, is being awarded the Ulysses Award by UCD this week. During the symposium, we will all be going out to UCD for a formal celebration of his extraordinary contribution to worldwide cancer research, but also to Ireland. We also have Dr. Tak Mak coming from Canada, who is, again, one of the leading experts in fundamental cancer biology. Dr. Lyos Pushtai, Dr. Mario Snow from Yale, real leaders in melanoma and breast cancer. Dr. Sarah Hurwitz is doing a wonderful public lecture tomorrow night, Wednesday night, 6 o'clock in the Herbert Park Hotel. Any breast cancer patient, any breast cancer patient's carer, relative, family member, anybody who's interested in breast cancer, anyone who's interested in cancer in general, open to the public, totally free meeting in the Herbert Park, Dublin, 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. Dr. Hurwitz, who's been coming to this meeting since she was a young faculty member in oncology in UCLA and is now the head of oncology in the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center in Seattle, one of America's preeminent cancer centers. So we salute her great achievements and we're very grateful to her.
Now, what are currently the most intractable cancers?
We're a bit stuck, of the common cancers, we're a bit stuck really on pancreas, I would say. There have been some advances in pancreas. A subgroup of patients with pancreas cancer who have a genetic susceptibility will get some benefit from some of the newer medications. It hasn't been a real success story in terms of immunotherapy. Chemotherapy for it has gotten a little bit better, but there's a lot of research going on in that area. My own colleague, Professor Ray McDermott in St. Vincent's, is one of the world leaders in research in that area.
Now, in terms of the new techniques, if you like, I mean, you talk about immunotherapy, then we often hear about drugs that are molecules that are designed specifically that they will only latch on to a cancer cell and will leave every other cell benignly alone.
That is absolutely correct, and I'm happy that I've lived long enough to see the day when we have drugs like that. I mean, conventional chemotherapy drugs are relatively nonspecific.
They're a blunderbuss.
Yeah, if they're a blunderbuss, the new ones are magic bullets. And we have, in the case of some cancers, seen extraordinary advances. Often these are niche areas. Sometimes for a particular kind of cancer, not everybody will have the particular little vulnerability in their cancer, which makes them sensitive to that drug treatment. But if they have it, it can be really, really spectacular. About maybe 20-25% of lung cancers will have a vulnerability to that kind of treatment. In thyroid cancer, there's been tremendous advances to the more common and less dangerous type of thyroid cancer is very susceptible to one of those drugs, a drug called lenvatinib. And the much less common but more aggressive kind can be very sensitive to a drug called selpercatinib. I have one patient at the moment who's just doing extraordinarily well for many years on that drug, having had quite a bit of misery with the older kind of drugs we had to give before.
Now, there are so many different kinds of cancer. We hear about lung cancer and we can link that to smoking and all the rest of it. And then there are cancers we link to the sun. Why are they all, what is common about them that they're all called cancer? Even though they look different, you're infected by them differently for different reasons?
Well, Pat, I think...
Is it a runaway cell or a
series? There is a wonderful paper a number of years ago by Dr. Hanahan and Dr. Weinberg outlining the hallmarks of cancer. And those hallmarks get, every couple of years, they add a few new hallmarks to it. But there are some things which make cancer cells. Normal cells grow, and they grow where they should grow and when they should grow and how fast they should grow. And they're all susceptible to control mechanisms. And normally built into a lot of normal cells are little suicide switches that if the cell does that wrong, the cell gets killed. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the combination of the growth becoming uncontrolled and the suicide switch failing allows the cancer cell to grow faster than it should, to become slightly abnormal, to have the ability to break off from where it is, get into the bloodstream, travel to other parts of the body and lodge. I mean, cells from your lung should not be present in your bones. But lung cancer cells will break off from your lung into your bloodstream, travel to your bones and form secondaries there, where they are still lung cancer cells in the bone. So another one of them is endless replication potential. I mean, some cells can replicate a number of times and then they'll stop replicating. Cancer cells lose that off switch. So these are all things which can be as different from a leukemia cell floating in your blood to a great big ugly tumor cell growing someplace and forming a big mass. But they all have those things in common.
Now, that off switch and the suicide switch, can you switch them back on?
Oh, great amount of research going on in that right now. And indeed, there are a number of anti-cancer genes which become inactivated. One is called P53. There are other ones, and there's just huge interest right now in trying to restore the function to those off switches to restore the body's own anti-cancer ability.
Now, the question of stem cells has got to come into this, because the idea of using stem cells to reboot everything, because at the beginning, for very few children, I'm sure when they're born, some of them may be born with cancer, I don't know, but I presume most are not. only a tiny fraction might have that misfortune. So therefore you think that at the beginning, when the stem cells are running around the body and deciding what's going to be a kidney and what's going to be a liver and all of that, that you could reboot in the aging body, for example.
Yes, and that is certainly being looked at for a number of metabolic and degenerative diseases. It's a little bit harder to see how it would fit in to a cancer treatment, and that the problem with cancer is those aberrant stem cells have already done their evil work and they are present. And the failure is not that there aren't good stem cells, but the failure is that there are bad ones that are running amok. But, I mean, there are applications of stem cell technology in cancer treatment, in the treatment of leukemias and certain of the blood cancers. And indeed, I did a lot of research in this, I was going to say, earlier in my youth, when we were trying to treat breast cancer and ovary cancer by giving huge doses of chemotherapy and then replacing the body's bone marrow stem cells afterwards. It didn't work very well in the end. It has some role. It certainly has a role in the treatment of blood cancers. It has not translated well into solid tumors.
Now, we've been talking about, if you like, pharmacology and treatment. What about radiation? What role does it still play?
Critically important role. And I would say one of the big advances over the last several decades has been the realization that for some kinds of cancer where terribly mutilating operations had previously been necessary, that radiation, often complemented with some kind of drug treatment, chemotherapy or other kinds of treatment, can prevent that. I mean, one classic example is mastectomy. Many in the 1950s and 60s, if you had breast cancer, sadly, you had to have your breast removed, amputated, sometimes two breasts removed. And now we know that for the great majority of breast cancer patients, because you can do lesser surgery and give radiation treatment in spirit, in the head and neck area, people had terrible operations where they would lose their voice box, lose their ability to swallow. And for many of those patients, very many of those patients now, the treatment will not involve that kind of surgery. Sometimes, sadly, it is still necessary, but it will. And one of the clever two new clever marriages of radiation with the newer technologies is radio labeling molecules, which are targeted drugs, which will bring little radioactive molecules specifically to the cancer cells.
So it's that kind of latching on, but exactly. They've got a little radioactive pack on their back.
That's exactly it. And that's being done in prostate cancer and for different kinds of cancer spread to bone. And there's another very interesting observation recently that the really exciting immunotherapies that have just so absolutely changed cancer treatment in the last 10 to 12 years, that sometimes there's a positive interaction between those and radiotherapy. If you kind of kill a few cancer cells with radiotherapy, let some of the contents of those cells get out into the system, the immune system can then recognize them. It's sort of like a vaccine process.
Yeah.
And then we've just seen updated data just last week at the European Society of Medical Oncology, which, I'm sorry to sound like a cliche, I'm just so happy I've lived long enough to see this. When I was a young doctor starting off in this road, if people had secondary malignant melanoma, kind of skin cancer, usually cured if it's removed, but in maybe 20% of cases, it spreads to other parts of the body. And a real problem in Ireland, by the way, we have a real, real problem with that disease, and it's getting much worse. If you had that disease and it was spread before, it was, with anecdotal exceptions, a death sentence. So we've now seen the updated data on the immunotherapy, the best immunotherapy treatment given for patients who have that 10-year follow-up for people with secondary disease. More than 50% still alive 10 years later. Mm. It's an extraordinary advance.
Now, the radiotherapy we're talking about, how influential is a kind of robotic technology now and precision delivery of radiation when you're using a radioactive beam? It was probably, again, like the blunderbuss of chemo. How accurate is it now and how precise might it be? Suppose you had a brain tumor, for example, that needed to be radiated.
Well, I'm not a radiation oncologist, but there have been tremendous advances in local radiotherapy, delivering the radiotherapy with sources that are implanted into the tumor, rather than, as you say, giving a blunderbuss, just putting the person under a machine and, you know, and giving rays that go right through them. And that that isn't as much improving the cure rate, but it's decreasing the toxicity. It is improving the cure rate in some cancers.
It's limiting the damage.
Let me rephrase that. It is improving the cure rate in some cancers, but it's certainly, you're right, the damage is being reduced, the side effects, the toxicity is less. There is some interest in a thing called proton beam therapy for around the eye, which may be a somewhat better way of giving it there. And there's also a great interest now in prostate cancer and gynecological cancers, putting radioactive sources into
the tumor. You might maybe tell us in a few words exactly what is immunotherapy as distinct from chemotherapy.
We all have an immune system. Our immune system is pretty good at keeping us out of trouble with infections. And the question always was asked, well, why doesn't our immune system deal with cancer? And our erroneous assumption for about 100 years was that the immune system did not deal with cancer because it was designed by God or evolution or whatever you believe in. It was designed to recognize foreign invaders in your body. And of course, cancer is not a foreign invader. Cancer is our own cells misbehaving. So we have discovered that, in fact, the immune system is capable of recognizing cancer as being something which shouldn't be there. And the reason it doesn't routinely attack it is because there are breaks and checkpoints built into the immune system to stop it from going rogue. And if we didn't have those checkpoints, more of us would have rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis. So this brilliant discovery, which led to two gentlemen winning the Nobel Prize about 7 years ago, was that you could inactivate the checkpoints. And when you do, the immune system revs up and goes to work against not every cancer, but lots of cancers. It's been transformative for melanoma. Really has been transformative for lung cancer too, although the impact hasn't been quite as big. It's been very good. Some kinds of rectal cancer, we now know some kinds of breast cancer. Really brilliant data presented last week again on bladder cancer. It's going to become much more widely used in the treatment of bladder cancer. So it's an incredibly exciting time, I must say, for that particular field.
Do you see the day, maybe not in your time or my time, when there will be no cancer, or if it arises, it'll just be very routinely treated and eliminated?
I guess the answer is someday it will, but I'll tell you what I do believe, that we will see year on year, every year it's getting a bit better. I mean, there's just continuous progress in it right now. It's very exciting.
Finally, a reminder once again of the public element of your symposium.
Public meeting is tomorrow night, Wednesday, in the Herbert Park Hotel at 6 o'clock. If you want to get details, contact karen.culhane, karen.culhane, at ccrt.ie. You can turn up on the night, register at the meeting. It's free, 6 o'clock. Wonderful speaker from Dr. Sarah Hurwitz from Seattle. Interest to breast cancer patients, relatives, carers, 6 o'clock, Herbert Park tomorrow night.
John Crown, Professor and Consultant Medical Oncologist at St. Vincent's Hospital Group. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.